So quite a few interesting words here in this verse. And it starts off with the word vishuddhaya. So as we understand, shuddha means to be pure or cleanse, whatever. But they say vishuddhaya means it's completely pure, completely cleansed. And then dharanaya through meditation, hata ashubha, by minimizing all these inauspicious material qualities, just by basically pushing all this out. And so basically what Bhishma is talking about here, actually, is it Bhishma talking, is it? I think it's Sukadeva Goswami talking, is it? Well, actually, no, he's not on the scene yet, so it wouldn't be easy talking. Sutta Goswami is describing, that's right, yeah, because Sukadeva Goswami hasn't appeared yet. He comes in 11 chapters' time. But the point that Sutta Goswami is making here is how Bhishma has become, his consciousness has become completely purified by focusing on Krishna. And this pastime is quite extraordinary because we see, if we look at the history, because Bhishma is wanting to see Krishna at the point of death, but not any Krishna. He wants to see Parthasarathi, and his mind is absorbed in that vision of Krishna running at him with a broken chariot wheel in his hand, and he's going to smash Bhishma with this chariot wheel. He's going to kill him, you know. And it's all part, because you see that the situation, it's like Bhishma's like he's an enemy, almost like an enemy of Krishna, but he's not. He's Krishna's pure unalloyed devotee on the level of prema. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur describes that he's experiencing prema, but prema in its infancy. It's like a beginning stage of prema. But he's definitely at the stage of prema. And we see what had happened is that Duryodhan, you know, because Bhishma, he wanted to see this vision, you know, and he talks about it here, how, you know, he's got this vision of Parthasarathi in his mind running at him with a chariot wheel in his hand, you know, to smash him, and he's got dust on his face and on his body, and he's got cuts all over his body from the arrows and things like that. And also, as he's running, his chatter falls on the ground. And Bhishma's just thrilled by that, to see that Krishna's prepared to go to such an extent to protect his devotee. He's just completely thrilled by that. And so the story, the way this whole thing evolved was that, I find this element of it really intriguing, is how to break his promise, Krishna, you know, was forcing Bhishma to break his promise. You know, and Bhishma knew this. Bhishma was saying, okay, I'm going to make Krishna break his promise, you know, because he's making me break my promise. So it's kind of really interesting, the play between Krishna and his pure devotee. I mean, we just go before the deities and we're sort of, you know, awe and reverence kind of thing. But Bhishma's completely different mentality. He's making me break my promise, so I'm going to make him break his promise. And which is exactly what he does. Because what had happened is that Duryodhan felt that Bhishma wasn't fighting strongly enough. So Duryodhan was goading him, Bhishma. He was saying, you know, you're just... you're impotent, you're not pushing, you know. Because Duryodhan was an expert diplomat, and he knew how to use words in order to extract what he wanted out of people. And you see, even at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, the way he addresses, Dronacharya and Karna and Bhishma, he knows whose name to mention first. Just like he says, I can't remember the verses in the first chapter, where he addresses Dronacharya first because he's a Brahmana, then he addresses Bhishma. But if he had addressed, say for instance, because Karna was Duryodhan's very, very dear intimate friend, and they had a very strong bond. And so if he had addressed Karna first, Bhishma wouldn't have fought. He would have said, let him fight, let him be the general. I'll sit on the sidelines till he's dead. You know? And actually what had happened was Karna said, you know, because there was this animosity between Karna and Bhishma, Karna said, I'll sit on the sidelines. When Bhishma's fallen, then I'll fight. So Duryodhan was very expert at diplomacy. So he was just trying to push Bhishma to fight harder. And so he said many unkind things. And Bhishma was repeatedly telling him, Duryodhan just didn't get this point. He just couldn't get it. He repeatedly, and he even mentions it at some point in the battle. He said, you know, my beloved child, I'm crying myself hoarse trying to tell you, as long as Krishna is on the side of the Pandavas, you cannot defeat them. He said, but I'll fight them to the best of my capacity, but you'll never defeat them. Because, you know, Bhishma understood who Krishna is, whereas Duryodhana could not accept it at all. So then what happens is that Bhishma says, okay, tomorrow I will fight in such a way that I will kill the Pandavas. You know, and I've got 5 arrows for this purpose. So he, special astras he placed on these arrows, and then Duryodhana said, well, better you give me these for protection because I'm worried that something might happen. So, you know, he understood. And then so he gave them to Duryodhana, and then Krishna remembered that Duryodhana had promised Arjuna that if there's ever anything you want, you just ask me, I'll give it to you. So Krishna, he said to Duryodhana, to Arjuna, he said, you remember that one time Duryodhana, he gave you this promise? He said, now's the time to ask him. You go and ask him. He's got 5 arrows, which are meant for the destruction of you 5 Pandavas. Go and take these arrows. So he went and he took the arrows. Prabhupada explains this story in a lot of detail. And so he went and took the arrows, and then when Bhishma came to get the arrows the next morning, Duryodhana explained to him what had happened, and then Bhishma understood, this is Krishna's trickery. Only Krishna can understand this. And he said, still, I will fight in such a way that Arjuna will be so, I may not be able to kill all the Pandavas, but I'll fight in such a way that Arjuna will be so challenged that Krishna will have to intervene. You know, because Krishna, he's broke, you know, because I promised Duryodhana I'd kill all the Pandavas. And now Krishna's interfered. He's broken my promise. So I'm going to cause him to break his promise. So you see the interplay between Krishna and his pure devotee. It's not like it's not like what we're experiencing. We're just experiencing this whole Aishwarya thing, and we bow down, we pray to the deity, things like that. There's no question, at least in my mind, there's no question of trying to sort of force Krishna to do something for me. But, you know, Bhishma is on such an elevated state of consciousness that he's able to act in such a way that forces Krishna to give up his promise. And we don't see that Krishna at this point, you know, he's saying, oh, well, you know, you acted like this, therefore, you know, I'm not going to give you my mercy and come before you. No, Krishna's relishing the exchange. And Prabhupada, in one of the purports here, he makes this comment. He says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has very saliently described what is happening here, in that when, because if we understand the nature of Krishna's body, it's completely transcendental. So where's the question of hurting a transcendental body? It doesn't happen. You can't cut, you know, as it mentions in the second chapter of the Gita, can't be cut by weapons, can't be moistened by water, can't be withered by the wind, can't be burnt by fire. You can't affect the transcendental. Yet we see that Krishna was manifesting wounds on his body. Prabhupada describes this is to bewilder the atheists, but also part of the loving exchange between Krishna and his devotee. Because Bhishma was getting satisfaction from shooting arrows at Krishna. Krishna was getting satisfaction by these arrows cutting his body. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes, he says, it's very much like when the lover bites the beloved on the neck. You know, I don't know what you call them, hickeys or love bites or whatever, you know. And that kind of satisfaction that the lover feels when the lover is biting like that, Krishna was feeling it in the same way. He was seeing this as an exchange of love. So for the non-devotees, they can never understand these types of things. It's just so beyond their concept. How can we understand? You know, because from the external view, this is an exchange of enemies. Krishna is, you know, from an external point of view, one would think that Krishna is Bhishma's enemy. But this wasn't what was happening at all. It was an exchange of love between Krishna and Bhishma. So very, very extraordinary pastime, this. And it's kind of interesting because a few temples I've been visiting lately have been reading, like when I was in New Vrindavan, they're reading from this chapter also. When I was in Sydney, they're reading from this chapter. So I've been speaking on this quite a bit lately. It's just a really, really extraordinary pastime. I'll read Srila Prabhupada's purport, verse and purport. So, by pure meditation, looking at Sri Krishna, he at once was freed from all material inauspiciousness and was relieved of all bodily pains caused by the arrow wounds. Thus, All the external activities of his senses at once stopped, and he prayed transcendentally to the control of all living beings while quitting his material body. Responsively, please, by pure meditation, looking at Lord Sri Krishna, he was at once freed from all material inauspiciousness and was relieved of all bodily pains caused by the arrow wounds. Thus, all the external activities of his senses at once stopped. And he prayed transcendentally to the controller of all living beings while quitting his material body. And also this whole pastime, there's many extraordinary things which, you know, are difficult to understand that are going on in this pastime. You know, the first part about, you know, the exchange, how they're exchanging love by what we would consider to be violence. You know, it's just not our, it doesn't fit within our sort of concept of what love means. But this is the nature of Krishna. Krishna is so vast and unfathomable. It's just like, you know, how many people can you have a loving relationship with at once? One, maybe? Maybe two? Three or four? But, you know, not really deep. You can't really give, you know, even to give one person your full attention is very, very difficult. Krishna is so amazing. He has a loving relationship with every single living entity. And how many living entities are there? You can't count it. And also, as Sanatana Goswami describes in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, he has a unique individual quality for every living entity. He exchanges with every living entity in a unique way. It's not the same. You know, there's no two similar exchanges. Everything is unique. This is how vast Krishna is. And we find some people in this material world claim to be God or want to be God. And they can't even have a relationship with half a dozen, like a deep, meaningful relationship with half a dozen people at the same time. So it's just foolishness that they're thinking like that. And the nature of the relationships, we understand there's 12 different rasas, you know, 5 primary, 7 secondary rasas. Krishna's exchanging with the devotees according to their dominant ras. And we see here with Bhishma, he had this virya ras. You know, it was like a friend, but also Sakya, but also this Viri, this chivalrous Ras. And Krishna was seeing this exchange, this warrior exchange, as a loving exchange. But, you know, if someone started to shoot arrows at me, I don't think I'd see that as a loving exchange. You know, I think I'd be quite freaked out by it. But for Krishna, it wasn't like that. He saw this was Bhishma's love for him. You know, so very extraordinary. Then also, we see here, in this pastime, how that Bhishma, even though Krishna, he was standing before him in his original two-armed form, that's not the form he wanted to see. He wanted to see this four-armed form because of his relationship with Krishna. He wanted to see the four-armed form of Krishna. So Krishna agreed to show him that form. And even though we see, you know, it's not like Bhishma doesn't understand. He doesn't understand. He understands that this is Krishna's original form. Even we see here in some of these verses, he's reflecting on the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, understanding that this is the highest exchange of love. He understands that. It's not like he's in some illusion about it. But his nature, he's a chatri, he's a powerful person. The most powerful chatri that probably ever lived. He's probably the most knowledgeable person in terms of Dharma that ever lived. We see here that, you know, because when it describes in the beginning of this chapter how the Pandavas, they came to the assembly to the place where Bhishma was lying in, on the bed of arrows at Kurukshetra to see him. Vyas was there, Shukadeva was there, Asita, Devala, all the great rishis were there. Anyone who was anyone, it was like the who's who of rishis were there. And they'd all come to hear Bhishma speak Dharma because he was accepted as being the greatest authority of Dharma. And then we see that even that Yudhisthira, because he was beside himself with lamentation. He felt so guilty about what had happened. Hundreds of millions of people have been killed just so I can be the king. How sinful I am. He was just so overwhelmed by this. And Krishna tried to explain, you know, I think first off actually Vyasa tried to explain to him. the great Rishi Vyasa, and he just, it didn't have any effect. And then Krishna tried to explain to him, and it didn't have any effect. He said, yes, what you're saying is true, but sorry, I just feel so overcome by this. And then Prabhupada explains, I think it's, might be in the previous chapter, Prabhupada explains that because Krishna within the heart as the super soul was not allowing Yudhisthira to accept this. Because why? Because he wanted to glorify Bhishma. He wanted to present Bhishma as actually being more learned in Dharma than he was. And then Yudhisthira came here, and Yudhisthira, Krishna, all the Pandavas, they came here and they spoke, you know, they heard Bhishma speak. And Bhishma spoke to Yudhisthira for 54 days, 55 days. He's lying on a bed of arrows. He's like, the arrows were going right through his body, through all his vital organs. Such a powerful person, he was able to maintain his life in such a situation. And not only was he able to maintain his life, it's described how when they first arrived there, the Pandavas first arrived there with Krishna, and Bhishma was feeling a little bit foggy, from pain and stuff like that. And then Krishna, he gave him a benediction, said, don't worry, you'll be able to remember everything perfectly. And the next day, Bhishma, he came back, Krishna came back, and he asked Bhishma, how are you feeling? He said, I can see all knowledge, just like if I'm looking at fish in clear water, I can see it perfectly clearly. And so, he was completely fixed in his mind. And then he just explains so, and Prabhupada goes into a lot of detail in the purports here about the types of knowledge. He explained the duty of a kshatriya, he explained the duty of different varnas and ashrams, and many, many things he explained here. And all the rishis were assembled there because they knew that Bhishma was going to speak these things, and they wanted to hear it because he was understood to be the greatest authority in Dharma. Which is also very interesting because look back at before Kurukshetra, when the gambling match, when Draupadi was dragged into the assembly and Dushasan and Karna tried to disrobe Draupadi. And Draupadi challenged Bhishma, you're the great authority on Dharma, why don't you do something about this? And he's saying, I don't know what to do, I'm bewildered. And we can see also this is the play of Krishna, because Krishna was setting this up to bring about the annihilation of the Kshatriyas. Because there's all these powerful, powerful people on the planet, and we're moving into Kali Yuga. And how's that going to work out when you've got people like Bhishma and Drona and all these personalities on the planet still? So, because Bhishma was quite a unique personality, and he had this benediction that he wouldn't leave until he wanted to. So Krishna was making all these arrangements, ultimately so the Bhagavatam could be spoken. The whole first canto is just setting the scene for the appearance of the Srimad Bhagavatam. 18th chapter, Sukadeva Goswami comes. 19th chapter, the sages start asking questions. Parikit starts asking questions. So it's a very, very amazing section of the Bhagavatam. Okay, Srila Prabhupada's purport. Here we go, time-wise. This material body is a gift of the material energy, technically called illusion. I like how Prabhupada uses this term, gift. I was just thinking about this yesterday. Everyone went to Ratha Yatra yesterday? Pretty amazing, huh? What a transcendental experience. And I was just sitting there on the chariot, and Merle very kindly asked me to sit on one of the chariots yesterday. And I was just thinking, how this whole Krishna consciousness is just a gift that Prabhupada's given us. We've got this most amazing gift. And you look at all these... I was talking with Sri Prahlad about this yesterday. You look at all these people in this material world, they're struggling. They're really struggling. We're driving up here, there's these big traffic jams going into London to go to work and stuff. Who wants to do that every day? Sit in traffic for hours and hours and hours, go to work, get harassed by your boss, get harassed by your co-workers, and at the end of the week you get a paycheck. And that's just one aspect of it. They're being harassed by their wives, they're being harassed by their husbands, their families, harassed by the material nature, being harassed by the government, being harassed by, people pay this bill, pay that bill. They're constantly being harassed. So we've been given this most amazing gift where if we just stick at it, we just apply ourselves to this process of Krishna consciousness, we'll go back to Godhead. No more harassment, no more misery. It's just such a, you know, you get to, you know, I mean, so many people are like, you know, I was noticing when we were on the chariot, just like there's one girl at the window of a shop, I don't know what the shop was, she's just looking in amazement, like, what are these people doing, you know? And they're bewildered, they don't know what we're doing, but, you know, I mean, who has that opportunity to just spend a whole day chanting and dancing in the streets of London and just having a wonderful time and feeling so spiritually uplifted by it? So, you know, I think it's important for us to always reflect on the gift we have, because I know sometimes even in devotional service it can be challenging, you know, especially when we're not so strong in our sadhana and the senses of the mind harass us a bit. We start to think, oh, you know, this devotional service, what's it all about? You know, I don't really know if I believe it, or you know, all these kind of thoughts come into our mind. But if we can just be, you know, a little bit introspective and reflect on what it is that Srila Prabhupada has actually given us, you know, the chance to actually be freed from all this material entanglement and return back to the spiritual realm ultimately. But even the lifestyle we live, we get to, you know, we live in the best places, we associate with the best people, we study the best philosophy. Best lifestyle. There's no one in the world, even these wealthy people, you know, that, you know, people, you know, like, there's all these, like when you're on planes and stuff like that, you see all these magazines that, you know, like trying to convince you, you know, that there is a better lifestyle out there, and you know, we should aspire to be like these wealthy people with their fancy cars and their fancy houses and this and that. But they're miserable. They've got so much money and they're miserable. They, you know, interesting statistic. In Sydney, the police released this statistic about, you know, how many times you've been harassed by these scams where you know, someone will send you an email saying, if you pay £50 into this bank, you know, oh, congratulations, you know, there's $50 billion waiting in a bank account for you, kind of something like that, you know. If you just pay this £50 transfer fee, we'll send you the money. So we can release the money, we'll send you the money. Has anyone ever actually responded to one of those things? Why? Because you know someone's trying to rip you off. But people do respond to those things. And you know, this statistic the police released, you know who are the people who respond to it the most? Huh? Rich people. Because they're so greedy. They want more money. They don't stop to think it's a scam. And everyone knows it's like someone in some, you know, poor African country just trying to squeeze. Or you get an email from your friend, you know, oh, I'm stuck in Mallorca, you know, and someone stole my passport and all my money. Please, if you can transfer £500 to my bank account, you know, here's the bank account straight away, da, 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 you know. I mean, I've had that happen so many times. You just write them an email. Did you send this? No, someone's hacked my email. But some people just straight away, oh, yeah, my friend's in trouble. I have to send the money. Yeah. But, you know, people are so greedy to try and get more and more and more. But we should just realize what we have in devotional service is a gift. It's a gift from Prabhupada. It's a gift from Krishna. And it's the greatest gift because you can achieve perfection of life with this gift. You can have the fancies, like I was sitting on the chariot, you're saying, looking at this Lamborghini went past. Really kind of powerful looking machine. And the, you know, the person is driving their Lamborghini, they're thinking they're so special. But hit a lamppost at 200 kilometers an hour and see what it looks like. Huh? And that's what happens. You know, I saw this lamppost was knocked over as we were going down, and I looked down, and there was a half a Mercedes symbol. You know, someone was like driving down the road in their car and lost control, going too fast, and hit a lamppost. It's like, so it doesn't matter, you know, what material facility you've got. If you don't understand the purpose of life, what have you got? You've got nothing. But in Krishna consciousness, by applying ourselves to this philosophy, we understand the goal of life, and we'll achieve the goal of life. So I think it's very important that we understand the nature of the gift we have. And this will come by studying Srila Prabhupada's books, by you know, regularly hearing and speaking on the Bhagavatam. Identification with the material body is due to forgetfulness of our eternal relationship with the Lord. For a pure devotee of the Lord like Bhishma Dev, this illusion was at once removed as soon as the Lord arrived. Lord Krishna is like the sun, and the illusory external material energy is like darkness. There's a verse, Krishna Surya Samamaya Hayandaka, Yahan Krishna Tahan Namai, Maya Adhikar. It says Krishna is like the sun, Maya is like darkness. Wherever there's the sun of Krishna, then Maya cannot exist. So if we're always absorbed in Krishna consciousness, if we're always trying to take steps towards Krishna, then Maya can't have any effect on us. Because Krishna is so powerful, there's something insignificant like Maya. Of course, from our perspective, Maya seems so powerful and insignificant, but from the perspective of Krishna, Maya is nothing. Insignificant. So if we take shelter of Krishna, Maya can have no effect on us at all. In the presence of the sun, there is no possibility that darkness can stand. It's just like when the sun shines, where's the scope for darkness? Of course, you don't see the sun so much here, but where I live, you see the sun a lot, you know. And, you know, when the sun's shining, it's like there's no scope for darkness at all. Therefore, just on the arrival of Lord Krishna, all material contamination was completely removed, and Bhishma Dev was thus able to be transcendentally situated by stopping the activities of the impure senses in collaboration with matter. The soul is originally pure, and so also the senses. But not the material senses, the transcendental senses. By material contamination, the senses assume the role of imperfection and impurity. By the revival of contact with the Supreme Pure, Lord Krishna, the senses again become freed from material contamination. So it's just a covering. This whole material identification, the whole material contamination, is just a covering. It's just like, you know, when I was a child, there was this musician in Australia. And he sung this song. The song was called Rose Colored Glasses. He was talking about how everything looked very nice through these rose colored glasses. So it's just like material body, material contamination is like a filter. Or, you know, you put sort of glasses on, and you see everything through this rose color, everything looks rosy. Or if I used to have these pair of driving glasses, you wear these driving glasses, everything looked yellow. So it's just like that, it's a filter. So if the filter is a human being, you look at everything through that filter. If the filter you're wearing is a dog filter, then you look at everything through that filter. So according to the filter, you see everything. It's just like if I had yellow glasses on, all these white dhotis would look yellow, because of the filter. So in the same way, according to the filter of the material body, and Krishna explains in the beginning of the third chapter of the Gita that, we're forced to act according to the influence of nature. So how nature influences. And he says, chanabhapi, you can't stop acting even for a moment because of the force of material nature. So the idea of applying ourselves in Krishna consciousness is to overcome the influence of material nature. And as he's saying here, get to this point of vishuddha. Vishuddha means no material influence at all. And when we get to this point of vishuddha, also sometimes called vasudev, when we get to this point of Vasudeva, that's the point at which Krishna can manifest in our heart because the heart is pure. Vasudeva means pure heart. And at this point, when you have this pure heart, then Krishna, Vasudeva, will manifest. And the process of devotional service is about removing all the anarchas, especially, if you look at how Rupa Goswami describes it, So by the process of bhajanakriya means anatha nivritti. It means removing all the impurities. And then as the impurities are removed progressively, then we go through higher and higher stages of evolution in bhakti until we get to the point of prema. The point of prema means no impurity at all. Prema you cannot fall down from. Even to the point of bhava, there's some impurity there, some very, very subtle impurity. And we see an example of Bharat Maharaj. There was some very, very subtle impurity there. So he fell down from that position. Once you get to the point of prema, that means no impurity. So Bhishma is at this same point. He has no impurity. It's saying here in this first line, there's no impurity. Vishuddhaya. No impurity at all. And through this fixed meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because it wasn't like he was just, like we come here, we see Krishna, and we go away, we go about our business and stuff like that. But Bhishma was completely absorbed in Krishna. His consciousness was completely absorbed in Krishna. There was nothing else for him. He was only interested in passing away with his thoughts completely absorbed in Krishna. That's the only interest he had in life. He gave up, as in the previous verses say, he fought on 1,000 battlefields, he killed, tens of thousands of people, he'd done all these things, and now he just let it all go. Not interested in it anymore. He's come to this point of not identifying himself as a Kshatriya or anything like that. He just, I'm Krishna's servant. I just want to give up my body thinking of Krishna. And that's what he did. By revival of contact with the Supreme Pure, Lord Krishna, the senses again become freed from all material contaminations. Bhishma Dev attained all these transcendental conditions prior to his leaving the material body because of the Lord's presence. And so, because he was, because we see Duryodhan, he was experiencing Krishna's presence, and so many personalities, Dhritarashtra was experiencing Krishna's presence, but they didn't become pure like this because they didn't accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They didn't take Krishna into their heart, which is what Bhishma's doing. He's taking Krishna into his heart. Therefore, when Krishna comes into the heart, there's no room for impurity because Krishna is so pure, he just drives out everything completely. It's just like Prabhupada sometimes would give the analogy of if you have a cup of milk, if it's half full, you pour ink in there, the ink will contaminate the milk. But if you fill the cup up completely, you try to pour ink into the cup. You know this concept of surface tension? Something Albert Einstein explained. Yeah? So it means usually when you have a cup of liquid, it has a meniscus, which means it goes up like that on the side. And so it's very easy to add something to it and it'll mix. But when it actually has what they call a reverse meniscus, where it brims over the top like that, the surface tension is what, because it's actually above the top of the cup. So the surface tension is what holds it together so it doesn't spill over. And so when you try to pour something like ink, because it's not it has less weight. That's not the right word to use. Huh? No, there's a specific word I'm looking for, but it's not what it is. I think it's something, it's not center of gravity. Something to do with gravity, I can't remember. I used to do science like 30, 40 years ago, and I forgot it all, Just uninteresting stuff. But there's some scientific term they use, but I can't remember what it is. But because of it's less, then it will flow off. If you drop mercury there, it will just go straight through because of its weight. Yeah? But the ink will actually just flow off. So when Krishna comes into our consciousness, and it's like that, material nature is just like the expression, water off a duck's back. It can't have any effect. Yeah? So that's the idea, is to become so filled up with Krishna, like the cup of milk, that doesn't matter what happens in this material world, it has no effect. We're still living in the world, but we realize we're not of the world, as Prabhupada would explain. So very, very important. The Lord is the controller and benefactor of all living beings. That is the verdict of all the Vedas. He is the supreme eternity and the living entity amongst all the eternal living beings. There's a footnote here, Nityo Nityananam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahanam, Yo Vidadati Kaman. And he alone provides all the necessities for all kinds of living beings. Thus, he provided all facilities to fulfill the transcendental desires of his great devotee, Bhishma Dev, who prayed as follows. And then we see there's a few nice, really nice verses coming up here. And Bhishma Dev is praying to Krishna. Then at the point when the sun, there's a really interesting, I don't want to sort of spoil the thunder of the next devotee who's coming along, but there's a few really interesting verses coming up where Bhishma Dev is just, he's reflecting on his past. He's also reflecting on who Krishna is. And Krishna's nature and that. But when it gets to the point where it says Uttarayana, where the sun comes into the northern path, then he stops. That's it, I'm going. And he just fixes his mind on Krishna. Krishna manifests his forearm form for him. And he leaves with that consciousness of Krishna. And ultimately, returns to the supreme abode. So very, very amazing pastime. And it's also particularly amazing that this is, in Srila Prabhupada's final moments, that he was in Vrindavan and he was just saying, I just want to leave my body like Bhishma Dev, on the battlefield. And for Prabhupada, obviously, his battlefield was preaching, to be preaching amongst the conditioned souls. So then he came here to Bhaktivedanta Manor. And, he didn't stop preaching. Right to the last minute, he didn't stop preaching. Bhishma Dev was the same. He didn't stop in his focus on Krishna. He didn't stop, talking with the Pandavas or explaining to them about the greatness of Krishna. Right to the last breath, he was, presenting Krishna consciousness. So, you know, such a stellar example for us all to aspire for, you know, to aspire to be like this, that we can actually give up our lives absorbed in Krishna in the same way. And not, you know, as we see with materialistic people, who are just, you know, absorbed in lamentation, absorbed in the body. You know, if I just had this, if I just had that, you know, doctor, please, you know, just give me a... Prabhupada talks about that person who had cerebral thrombosis and was just like praying to the doctor, I'll give you any amount of money, just give me 4 more years. And Prabhupada said, his doctor couldn't give him 4 more moments. You know, and Merlin and I were discussing this on the way up, you know, with all these, the doctors, you know, with their chemotherapies and stuff like this. You know, I've never seen anyone who's been saved by chemotherapy. You know, I, a lot of my friends have left over the years with various things like that. I've never seen anyone saved by chemotherapy. Maybe prolong the suffering for a bit and you know, create so many different problems for you. Your hair falls out, your teeth fall out, you know, your skin goes weird. It's like, you know, your memory goes. They can't prolong your life. They'll tell you they can, but, you know, our life is a predetermined thing, and so we just use that for Krishna service. And that way we become peaceful and satisfied in this world. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions, comments?